welcome to The Seagull, the place to stay up to date on everything you need to know about the 102nd Intelligence Wing at Otis Air National Guard Base, right here from beautiful Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I'm Tim Sandlin from Public Affairs. Let's get you up to speed on what's going on here at the Wing. Welcome to October 2024. The fall is finally here, which can mean only one thing, the return of pumpkin spice at Dunkin's. Well, that and commuting over the Bourne Bridge is bearable once again. Well, let's get started. The U.S. Air Force is going through a period of change, arguably the most significant since its inception in 1947. We are adapting to the challenges of the great power competition by our near-peer adversaries, Russia and China. The Chief of Staff, General David Alvin, recently explained the current state and the future state of our Air Force, the introduction of units of action, combat wings, and how these new ways of thinking and organizing forces better prepare our airmen to fly, fight, and win.
Looking out at what the challenges are going to be for the next 20 or 30 years is something he brought me into the Air Staff and charged me with. And this really started my personal journey for thinking strategically, enterprise-wide. Wrote this document called America's Air Force, A Call to the Future. It was sort of a strategic vision, defining strategic agility as the thing that we needed to have to be able to adapt and respond faster than the adversary. A couple years later, we wrote this thing called the Air Force Future Operating Concept. And the theme behind that was operational agility, how we actually are able to operate in a manner that allows us to adapt to change quicker and respond more rapidly than the enemy. And if you looked in that document, you would see things like collaborative combat aircraft. We called them something else. You would see things like JADC2. Then we called it multi-domain command and control. You would see things like proliferated LEO architecture. Remember, we still owned space at that time. We thought of it differently, but the idea of doing that, many of the things, the concepts since then were really born about a decade ago for me. And then when I went off to UCOM, I helped write the strategy for UCOM, and I understood that the theater strategy was incomplete because it was so intertwined with the global strategy and we had to be integrated more. It's starting to come together that we're having major threats that required more than diffuse or regional responses. And so then when I came back to the Joint Staff as the J5, started writing these global campaign plans, understanding the interdependencies and the interplays between combatant commands on these threats that were growing in geographic area and crossing UCP boundaries with impunity. And that went into our O plan development, understanding that one operational plan needed to talk to another operational plan in order to ensure the efficacy of both of them. And then the National Defense Strategy of 2018 came out and started talking about a pacing threat, going more towards this idea of great power competition. The Joint Staff then started working on this thing called a joint warfighting concept, which looked at taking the individual services modernization efforts and putting them into a theory of victory against a pacing challenge. We started to have a galvanizing, an idea of a galvanized joint force working together for the first time since air-land battle. And then, of course, reinvigorated by the 2022 National Defense Strategy, reinforced that. So this has really shaped my thinking. And when we started putting together the idea of reoptimizing for great power competition, to me, it was serendipitous because it was the perfect time. We're developing the capabilities, but do we have the structure? Do we have the organizational alignment? Do we have the processes to be able to have an institution that can adequately adapt to this environment? And that was the key. It was the environment. It's not great power competitions. Air forces aren't in competition. Great powers are in competition. We have to make sure that we have the Air Force that when that competition turns to the potential of conflict, that we can either deter that conflict or decisively defeat if called upon. That hasn't really changed. So when we think about it, what is it about this environment that we need to adapt to? In my thinking, I go back to the last time when we had sort of great power competition. And the reason why I think it's more challenging for us today is because if you think about it, in the Cold War, we had a mindset. We understood the Soviet doctrine. We understood their capabilities. And we were galvanized as a force, understanding a common target against which we were building our capabilities. We were developing our people. We were generating readiness. Was against that single threat. And then a seminal event happens. The wall falls down, and it's cascading events, and the Cold War is over. And we're in this unipolar moment, an aberration in history, where we're dominant over just about any of the instruments of power without a clear adversary against which that we have to align our national security. And then after that unipolar moment, we get sort of somewhat surprised, another seminal moment that snapped the country, the world, into an awareness that we're in a different environment post 9/11. Asymmetric capabilities can actually threaten us in a way we hadn't seen before. So these two seminal events were sort of the catalysts that drove us to adapt to a new environment. But here's the challenge. We haven't had that catalyst. There hasn't been this seminal event from the counter VEO time until now, but I'll tell you, we're in that environment. And so the challenge of our time, I think, is to be able to understand that, and absent some catalyst, to be able to pierce through the fog and the opaqueness and say, this is the environment we're in. We need to wake up and we need to adapt. That was the impetus for us as the Air Force looking to do this reoptimization for great power competition. The most coherent units that we normally deploy with are maybe an operational flying squadron and maybe the maintenance squadron that goes with it. And they will deploy from a couple of bases. They'll meet over this now mature installation over the Middle East because we've been doing it for over two decades. And the rest of the combat support elements, all those that make up the rest of it, will join in on them and meet in the theater. Why? Because we've been doing the same thing over and over for 20 years. It's a mature mission. It's a mature theater. And so we don't want to break the bases at home. So we'll take a couple from here, a couple from there, a couple from there. And we don't get punished for it because we can execute the mission that way and we don't break the base. And we manage our operations tempo individually like that. That's not going to work in the area of great power competition. If you have to pick up and go on short notice and execute combat power at scale in a contested environment, you can't do it by meeting your fellow airmen in the theater and saying, hi, nice to meet you, let's go to war. That's not how you need to do it. The way we need to do it, this is where we're transitioning to in our projecting power in great power competition, is having deployable combat wings back to the unit equipped with everything it needs to pick up and go and command and control a different way into a contest environment, into an environment where you may be under threat, you may be under fire. You have to know how to do all of the joint warfighting functions, protection, movement, maneuver, not just go to a mature theater and execute the air tasking order. So they need to be able to pick up and train through this AFWERGEN cycle, train through the individual, the collective, the certification, and the commitment phase to pick up and go over into the theater and be ready to execute operations through what we have as agile combat employment, which is our schema maneuver that enables survivability and combat effectiveness in a more contested environment. That's what we need to do. And oh, by the way, left behind, we need to ensure that those airbase wings that are managing the wing are still viable. Because guess what? If we think we're going to be in an era of great power competition and could be in a conflict, we need to understand that even our home bases are not going to be sanctuaries. Those base commanders need to know how to fight cyber attacks, power disruptions, counter small UASs. Those are the things that the adversary, a thinking adversary, will try to attack to keep us from continuing to generate power and projecting it into theater. So that's why we need to change the way that we're projecting power. We have some of these in-place combat wings. We're not going to deploy our missile wings for it, no. But we need to make sure that we also have a force generation methodology that enables them to maintain their readiness and understand the health of all the infrastructure that enables them to do their mission as well. So that's just one of the main areas, under projecting power.
We've got two episodes of Chevrons to share with you this month. First up, in episode 38, we spoke to National Guard Senior Enlisted Advisor Tony L. Whitehead about his career and his perspective from decades of service. C shared his advice for the enlisted force. In episode 39, we talk about enlistment as a path to citizenship. Tech Sergeant Timothy Thorpe, a Massachusetts Air National Guard recruiter, and his recruit, Airman Daniel Olubodon, a native of Nigeria, joined us in the studio. Airman Olubodon was granted U.S. citizenship during military basic training. You can find the Chevrons podcast on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Like and subscribe to see future episodes.
Whenever you're ready. You ready now?
Rock and roll. Don't be mediocre. You know, you know as well as I do when you're standing in front of people that are not giving their best. Don't let that become the example for you. You know, we can all find people that can teach us how to get by or how to get over. But we need people in our life that know how to teach us how to get ahead. And you need to be able to live that example. And that goes to the educate, empower, and execute piece. But when you're in the presence of mediocrity, get away from it. And every now and again, look in the mirror. And if you're being mediocre yourself, you may need to get that pep talk from you or from somebody you know that'll tell you the truth. Don't be mediocre. Don't be afraid of ambition. Ambition is extremely important to me because, you know, when you think in terms of ambition, some people will tell you you need to slow down. You know, you've done too much or you're going too fast. And the reality is, if you're doing it for the greater good and you're taking people along with you for the right reasons, that's the direction you need to go because our organization needs that. And if we don't get that, we won't have those leaders that understand that we have got to continue to press forward. We can't go steady as she go. Steady as she go means that there's somebody still driving the ship. And those driving the ship needs to be the people that understand that we do what we do for the greater good, and you have to be ambitious to do it. Ambition is not a bad word as long as it's for the greater good. And then, of course, understand and employ emotional intelligence. I just talked about it a moment ago, so I don't have to really get into it again, but I think it's important for you to understand how to get the best out of your folks and then get out of the way and let them be the best at who they are. Because if we try to completely guide and keep them in a box, we'll never get the best out of them. Creativity, innovation comes from folks that have the belief that their folks will back them, that their leaders will back them. So you've got to be able to do that. So get out of the way, let them be their best. And you do that by understanding emotional intelligence and knowing how to get the best out of them. Take care of yourself. I didn't do so well at that. I was doing great at the beginning and every now and again, I mess it up. I have a stent in my chest because I probably didn't listen to the doctor when I needed to. But I understand what it means now to make sure that I have to be an example. We're not perfect and you cannot be perfect and you should not try to have people believe that you are perfect. But the example that you want for people to follow has to be the example that they see when you walk through the door. Any other is not really you. And if it's not really you, then you can't expect them to be themselves when they show up every day. And I talked about being present. Okay. And then, of course, take care of your family. You know, after all this is gone, you know, some of us have done some things. We've made some challenges or changes in our life, but take care of your family, because when this is all done, 20, 30, 40 years, you want to make sure that those that have been on that ride with you are there when it's done. And I need to know that the investment that you've made, that they've made, it meant as much to you as it meant to them. That's it.
What are the benefits of gaining your citizenship through enlisting?
It's immediate. Right, as soon as basic training is over, there's a ceremony, and then I don't know as far as the actual paperwork on the back end, but they help you down in basic, I believe, correct?
Yes, you were right. So when you get down there, it's around week two or week three. You go down to one of the offices and you like fill out your application out. They do pretty much. It's like I said, it's pretty immediate. Like by week five, week six, you already did what's called you do your interview, and when you finish your, if you pass your interview, it's like right there you raise your hand and you take the oath and you become a U.S. citizen.
What was that experience like? That happened at Lackland during basic training.
Yes, ma'am. And that like I wasn't expecting to raise my hand straight up. I was called immediately. I'm like, okay, well now I'm a U.S. citizen. It's like, okay, they asked you a couple of questions like on the U.S. citizenship test, mm-hmm. and like which you have the resources, what's it called? We get the resources too. Like you get the list of the questions, and also on our little tablet that we're given at basic training to actually like study our word knowledge stuff. There's a section there where it's like interview questions for people that actually are doing what's it called, the citizenship process, and you pretty much like just practice and test on your own. It's so I would say it is. Easy, it is fast, but it's also dependent on the individual as well. If you want it, you got to put some work in. If you, like, you got to study on your own, because the MTIs, no one is going to hold your hand to study. It's going to be up to you to study. So they will help you out also the point of the interview. And if you bump the interview, that's unfortunate, but it's hard not to really what's going to bump it, because you have the resources in front of you and you have studying. And again, you have your airmen to your left, to your right, your wingmen that are actually willing to help you. I remember I was a little bit scared of the interview, and I had over 20 airmen's like all gathered around me. Like, you know what? We're going to start asking you a question. Answer the question. It's like that commander itself is like, it's really hard to do so. And you get an interview, you take the oath. But just one thing is, the oath is dependent on the last day of training. So just because you take the oath doesn't mean you're a citizen officially until you get the nationalization paperwork given to you, which is like on the day of graduation. So if, for example, the recruit decides to quit after taking the oath, that citizenship gets, that it's gone. They're not going to be U.S. citizens because, it's dependent on them completing basic training, actually graduating basic training. So on the graduation day, you guys get to do a little walk. They get to go out first, and they kind of march in a single file, in a single line. They do a left face, and kind of like they march this way, and they face this way, like everyone's facing this way, and they go through every person on the line and like call your name, where you're from. You just kind of do a little one step forward and stand right there, and after the end of everything, they right face you guys. So from here now to here, and you guys pretty much march out back to your flat. So that is, I was a little bit shocked because I was like, you told me I gotta march in front of this amount of people and in this group, like in this little thing, like, but it was really awesome. It was amazing. Awesome experience, and I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
So I was fortunate enough to be down at Lackland back in May for advanced recruiting training, and they took us to a graduation. And from my own graduation 11 years ago, like, there are things that you just remember, like they're ingrained in you. Ray Charles singing, like, that's the one that's always like right here. And after seeing that ceremony for the graduation that I was at, like, there's a new like top tier. Like, it's just, it puts such a huge like just lump in your throat as far as the vastness. And again, like, when you're among the sea, you have no idea because you're just a drop in the bucket. But when you actually get to be in the stands and you see the vastness, all the different flights, how many people are completing this training in this 1 week out of the year? But then among all of them, there's all of these individuals who are equally getting their citizenship on top of this big day. Like, it's a really cool experience. And more so, I guess, for the members who are already in, like, if you can go back and see it, go back and see it just to get that inverse perspective, because it's unbelievable.
Thanks for listening to The Seagull. For more news from the 102nd Intelligence Wing, or to learn more about the stories you heard on this program, head over to our website at www.102iw.ang.af.mil or search for 102iw on any major social media platform.